Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 239.
Hello, hello, this is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we grab that construction paper, cut out a bunch of hearts, and give it to everyone we know, because like winter in Game of Thrones, Valentine's Day is coming, but it's way less sinister. I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and I'm just making Valentine's a big fat day of love to, like, everyone. Why don't you join me? And when this is done, as a podcast community, we'll turn our attention to Persian New Year, because in a pandemic, we just have to make a big deal out of these holidays, and for no other reason than it's fun, and we need to like remember fun in the world. Remember fun, guys? Fucking fun. Today we'll end the show talking about love and romance because, like I said, Valentine's Day is coming. But we'll start the show talking about the fuckball pandemic, and we'll assess whether it's slightly decreasing in its fuckballishness. We'll make mention of the impeachment, and finally, the Marshall Plan for moms. What is it? Today's panel. Oh my God! I mean, Anita, you've really outdone yourself. That's our producer, whose name you hear me mention at the end of every show. She has assembled a panel that is such mwah, perfection for today. I can't even tell you, joining us for the very first time, but not the very first time to me and my heart, because this gentleman is a stand-up comedian who has just killed all over the city and the country. He's a fantastic, fantastic comedian. He's also co-head writer and co-executive producer of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee, because he's fancy. And if you'll recall, we had Samantha Bee on the show not too long ago. So, you know, she was the warm-up act for Mike Drucker. Hi, Mike.
Hi. So great to have you on the show. Thank you for having me. This is such a nice intro. I appreciate it.
Oh, no, I appreciate you being here. And then the other person I appreciate being here. Oh, my God. We love him so much. He's a veteran of Fake the Nation. He's a veteran of just saying the right fucking thing all the time. He's so smart. His writing is just a go-to in our household. He is the justice correspondent at The Nation. Folks, it's Ellie Mistal. Hey, Ellie.
Thank you so much for having me. Are parents allowed to have Valentine's Day when you can't send your kids anywhere, ever? Like, is that even a thing?
I don't know. What happens normally with kids in Valentine's Day? I don't even know.
We'll talk about this at the end of the show.
Okay, great. Yeah, yeah. Let's save it for the section on fucking. Okay. Let's get into it with topic number one. So we actually haven't talked much about the pandemic in a while. It's obviously an undergirding, which is like a pumpkin version of undergirding. It's an undergirding force in whatever we do talk about. But I did want to do like a very specific and focused pandy check-in. So let's start with this ridiculously broad softball, which is with this pandemic, where do you feel like we're at, Ellie?
Well, my mother, who lives with us and is 70, got her first shot of the Pfizer vaccine literally yesterday.
Yes.
There was actually some question about whether I could make the show because they were thinking about making her do it tomorrow, in which case I would have had to miss the show because, like,
yeah, of course.
that is then the linchpin. My mother being protected and healthy becomes the linchpin for all of the rest of the household to kind of get back to normal. So if my mom can be protected, then there is a non-zero chance that I can send my children to camp this summer. We have been remote only the entire time because she's older and, you know, more at risk. There's a non-zero chance that I can send my kids to camp this summer. There's a very good chance that I can send my kids back to in-person learning, which is also learning in the fall. And there's a non-zero chance, you know, and with that kind of as a hope, there might be a chance that I might be able to get the vaccine. And I've got, you know, what, as Chris Christie might say, I've got a lot of comorbidities that I have to worry about, right? But in terms of like, where is this going? Like, this cannot go anywhere until at least me and mine get our vaccine. And then we can think about returning to some level of normalcy.
Mike, where are you at?
I mean, I'm in a different situation in which I have nobody, so it's a little bit easier for me in that I don't have to worry about anyone. But I feel the same way. I feel like it's like everyone's waiting for the vaccines to go back to normal. You know, I work remote too for my show, but I would like to go somewhere. Like right now, even, you know, hanging out with someone outside of home feels like you're planning a heist. Where, like, you're like, someone has to be the wheel person, other people have to be there at a certain time. Like, you, so I think that we're probably at the beginning of the end, but it's going to be a long tail on that.
Okay, and yes, and I think that the tail doesn't need to be sad. Like, it can be, I think we can have a fun tail, or, like, we could, you know, we could be creative with the tail.
Yeah.
I just want to point out, to interject some, like, actual headlines, which I think Ellie Mistal's mom getting the vaccine is a headline unto itself. In addition to that, the New York Times decided to report, after reporting on Ellie Mistal's mom, that they wrote, after a brutal winter rise, U.S. virus deaths are declining. Okay, so that was, like, a nice headline.
Isn't that really just because Christmas is over? The whole reason why things were on the rise is because people were idiots over Thanksgiving and Christmas. Idiots in completely predictable idiot ways. That's why we've been dealing with this spike all throughout January. So of course, now that people don't have an excuse to go get grandma sick, to go get Uncle Bill sick, now the incidence of virus are coming down. Again, this is entirely predictable. And one of the things that I think has frustrated me so much with this pandemic is that from last year, at about this time last year, you could have predicted everything that's happened if we were stupid. Like, if you just assumed that we were going to be as dumb as possible, this entire year could have been pre-written. And we're still in that phase of so you talk about, can the long tail be happy? It's just a question of whether or not we're ever going to get a clue. And we're ever going to decide to be intelligent about dealing with this. If we were intelligent about dealing with this, you're right. There are more things we could be doing. But the problem is that we're constantly, you know, we're in a kind of least common denominator situation, right? Like we are just held to the level of the dumbest among us. And that prevents us from doing things we would like to do.
And can I also just in terms of the dumbest among us, the dumbest that actually make me really angry are the ones in warm weather states, especially like California. California's death toll has surpassed New York. Now, I think I'm from California, so I get to shit on California as much as I want. Like, that's the rule. But I was like, you guys, you can hang out outdoors. Like, you don't need to be up in each other's faces in your houses that also have backyards. What are you doing? Like, it was in the rise in California. I mean, I obviously this is completely, I'm overlooking levels of what is it called? Overcrowding in homes. They have like a higher level of overcrowding. I understand like a lot of the sociological reasons why some of the spread happened in places like Los Angeles County, but I mean, some of the other spread just happened because some people were like, I don't need a mask. I've got gemstones in my pocket and slash wellness. You know what I mean? Like I think it was, there was just some like, what, like stuff that doesn't make sense that was coming out of my beloved home state. Again, broad, I'm just painting a broad brush, whatever. Obviously, I don't mean it in, you know, in whatever. So don't at me. But like, but that, the warm weather states I found the most baffling. But just a quick, again, some more actual numbers. New coronavirus cases are a leading indicator for deaths, and that statistic has been improving markedly for a month. The 7-day average in new cases is a reliable indicator, and it's fallen more than 50% since it peaked on January 8th. And also just to note, most kinds of coronavirus infections that include influenza peak during the winter. And they think that, you know, there's no reason to think of COVID as any different. So we had our peak in the winter and then it'll slowly come down. Now there's been a disparity, and this was big news last week, and I actually think this story will change like week to week. It's probably in different this week, but last week we saw disparities with vaccine delivery among black and brown communities. Why was that happening?
I don't think I'm the one to take this question.
Everyone is the one to take this question on the show, but Ellie, do you want to start us off?
Because the country was built on racism.
good answer. Survey says.
Ellie, you want to?
9 out of 10 black people agree. because this country is built on racism. Look, there are legitimate worries. I was worried at various points. My mother, who just got it, was worried. There are legitimate worries because the medical community has a long and dark history of mistreating African Americans, right? Not only is there a history of this country using us as guinea pigs, which just they do, like it happens, there is also a history of medical professionals disregarding our symptoms, disregarding our pain. There's a lot going in. There's a lot of reasons why many African Americans, many black people don't trust doctors. There are a lot of reasons why I don't trust doctors. Look, I don't know that I would have been, I've said this on in public before and gotten a little bit of heat for it. I didn't want to be in the first run of the vaccine. Well, test it out in some white folks. You know, you guys go take it, see if you drop it, you know, and then come to me, right? Like, I am one of those people who was actually moved when people like Obama and Bush and Biden got the vaccine, because I was like, well, they ain't gonna let the president just drop dead, right? Like, the, you know, maybe they would have let Trump, but like the rest of them, like, you know, they're not gonna just let them, you know, drop dead. So like, it took some convincing even for me to get to the point where I was just like, all right, I think this is something that's safe for me to take. And I'll emphasize that when I'm thinking about what's safe for me to take, that's a whole different conversation than what I would think is safe for my children to take. Right. Like, I'm very reluctant to like throw my children into this fundamentally not untested, but certainly quickened, you know, testing pace for the vaccine. So all of those factors kind of go into play when you think about black American reluctance to the vaccine. But then there's this issue of just underservice in our communities, right? Like, one of the things the numbers aren't telling us, and I've seen the numbers that you're referring to, one of the things that they're not telling us is whether this is because Black people are reluctant to take the vaccine, or because states like Kentucky are bad at providing the vaccine in minority communities, right? Like that's also a factor here. The distribution of this thing has not been equal, has not been fair in lots of cases. And part of that is just government kind of incompetence. But, you know, so there's a lot of things going into this. You hope that over the long course, like over, you know, like you said, it could change from week to week. You would hope that by, you know, January 1st next year, all of that weirdness has been sorted out and there is a general level of vaccination.
Right. And I think, you know, and I read in a piece coming out of the experience in Colorado and with their vaccination, they said over 60% of whites and Latinos say they definitely or probably would get vaccinated, while just over 40% of blacks said they plan to, because the distrust of government is real and it's backed by like a long history in which medical trials, you know, were conducted in really horrible and hazardous ways on black people. They also, people of color also have a history of being underrepresented in drug trials, right? As you mentioned. So that's another reason. So I think it's like an all of the above situation. It's like distrust of the vaccine, distrust of government, distrust of, you know, processes by which vaccines are made. And then there's the distribution issue, which, Mike, I mean, there's also this like huge divide between my own parents, which by the way, have both been vaccinated and I'm really, 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 really relieved. My dad is a doctor, so it's like he was getting direct information from his hospital on how to do it. But when it came to my mom, I remember thinking like, this is complicated. Yeah. Can you talk about the tech divide that we're seeing? You know, you have to log on and sign up to a thing, except for if you're like 80 years old,
right.
Maybe you don't know how to do that, you know? And so what's happening there?
Absolutely. Well, one, of course, that's another reason that there's a giant class disparity in who can get it and who can't in terms of, my parents got the vaccine. Luckily, they're in Florida, so they really needed it because Florida is not a good state for anything. if my mom is pretty computer illiterate. She's just never really got into using computers. And if my dad wasn't computer illiterate, I don't know what we would have done in terms of signing them up. Like, you know, we don't know anything about their insurance plans. None of their kids live near them. So there's this, I don't know, it makes me afraid that the people who need it most are the ones who are not going to get it initially. I also, you know, I've heard stories of, you know, one or two people I know that I disapprove of who've cheated the system and got one when they didn't need one.
Yeah, without getting too specific, obviously, and giving us their social security number, what is about their situation did you disapprove of? Because I'm starting to see things like this now, and it's very, it's a constant, ever-evolving, interesting morality question.
I think it's the same way I felt a lot of the pandemic, where it's like, I'm doing what you told me to do.
Right.
And you're ruining it because you're not doing what we could all easily do right now.
Right.
And I think, you know, like it's, you know, it's not like, you know, it's not like they're jumping in line at like, I don't know, a restaurant or something where it's annoying because you have to wait another 15 minutes. It's someone who will need the vaccine, especially at this point when it's, you know, people with comorbidities, I can't talk today, or, you know, essential workers or the elderly. Like, if you're a 30-year-old man getting it and you're healthy, you are taking the vaccine from someone who could die if they don't have it, at least right now.
Look, I went to Harvard. I went to Harvard. I know some people who are just like, I got mines. I can hook you up, right?
I know a couple of people as well. And it definitely makes me feel uncomfortable. But I will say one thing just in terms of like somewhere, you know, my dad having an insider view of like how some of these things get delivered. Some of what is happening is people are vaccine shopping. They're not showing up to appointments that they have. And then so then at the end of the day, they have this leftover and there's different ways of filling that leftover. And some of those ways is texting your buddies to please show up to this parking lot at 5:30 p.m. sharp. This is your one chance. And in those situations, I'm a little bit like, don't let the vaccine go to waste. Whatever you fucking
sure,
do, do
yeah.
not let it go to waste. You know what I mean? Give it to a 25-year-old trust fund baby, but don't let it go to waste. Like that's, right. you know what I mean? So I can I share with you, though, in closing here, a little bit of schadenfreude that I experienced. Listeners may have heard once or twice or 75 times that I lived in Paris for a time in my life. It's not a big deal, guys, but it's just something that I've done. And just, you know, and I'm multilingual and it's fine. But anyway, I lived in Paris for a while and I was, you know, I had like checked out of Parisian news for a little bit there. And I rechecked back in and apparently they have a really elaborate system of like permits, right? To be able to go outside. So you need to either be walking your dog, you need to be going to the supermarket, whatever, and or you need to be purchasing une baguette, and in order to do, and it's interesting because like they really do. I was like, do they really? Yeah, I was talking to someone who lives in France. It doesn't matter, and I was like, do they really check the permits? They really do check the permits. Paris is on such a more extreme lockdown, and I live in New York City. Mike, I think you also live in New York, and Ellie is in the tri-state area. We are just not experiencing things that way. And I think we've maintained relatively good numbers. Like we're weirdly a decent example. And I had a little like schadenfreude where I was like, oh, France, like one of those European countries that we're supposed to be envious of all the time. Is it doing it as well? And I felt, you know, from a New York to Paris comparison, I felt a little good about that.
Yeah, you got to keep that shit in New York because you can't start talking about Florida because then.
Right, right, exactly. No, and then you know, it's a completely different scenario. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How is it going, cowboy? Is
that I was talking to like a really like fabulous barista who had gotten back from Miami a while ago. He's been tested multiple times, he assured me. But he was just like, yeah, I was in Miami and there are no masks as far as the eye can see. It's as if it's not happening the whole thing. And that's very interesting, especially for a state that has such a large senior citizen population. What?
Oh, yeah, and they're going out. They are my brother, my sister, and I have had to bully my parents because they'll be like, oh, you know, this coworker's having a birthday party, but he's been really safe. And it's like, no, you're not going. You are not going. Like, we've almost become parents in this way where it's like, you're not going. If you go to that, we will be mad at you.
You're doing your parents are doing circuit parties in Miami. I love
it's like they're teenagers like sneaking out the window at night and we're like, no, you can't leave.
That's awesome.
It goes to how different our pandemic experiences are as a nation and why we haven't been able to have a really unified response to this, because people are experiencing this in such different ways depending on the state, how conservative the state are, how many conservatives are in their social group. People people have had completely different pandemic experiences compared to me, compared to you. And that's going to have an effect when it comes time to, which I hope we get to at some point in this country, when it comes time to protecting us from the next one, right? Like, because at some point there needs to be a reckoning as to what the hell just happened? How did we lose 500,000 people? And what are we going to do to protect ourselves from the next pandemic that right now is unfreezing itself from global warming, right, in the Siberian North. Like, that's coming, right? This was a test really early on. I don't know if you know Malcolm Nance, who's on the TV sometimes as a security analyst. Way back, and this is, again, last February, last March, he said to me, you know, offline, he was like, you know, the bottom line is that this is a test run because this is not a depopulation event. This is a bad disease. This is not a depopulation event. The next one is going to be a depopulation event if we act like this. And again, act like this based on how people were not taking it seriously last year. Yeah. So some point, we're going to have some kind of real kind of understanding of the mistakes that we've made. And that's going to be hard because different people made different mistakes. And we didn't all experience this as one nation.
Yep.
Right. I think, and also because it was a depopulation event, it made people, you know, have such varying degrees of you know, care about it. It was that's part of the thing that's frustrating about it, is that it isn't the clearest of diseases, right? I want to just, as we close out here, I just want to ask people, you know, I know that, again, the vaccination process is difficult or easy, depending on where you are. And I just mean the signing up part of it. There's a website called TurboVax in New York. If you're looking to figure out how to do it, where
TurboVax,
to do it.
That sounds TurboVax, super safe.
It's like congregating. TurboVax is sort of it's congregated all that information. There's another thing called Vaccine Appointment Assistance, the Vaccine Appointment Assistance Team that helps older people do the tech part of making appointments. They can do that on the phone. So again, that's Vaccine Appointment Assistance Team. And if there are things like this in your community, please hit me up on the social medias that we should all not be using. And I will compile those things and I will also post them and send them out so that you can have an easier time of helping your parents get vaccinated. All right. We are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about other things. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of
Pro's custom hair care and skincare. I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that, but we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness. For like many years, because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing. You don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, Pros prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level. If you think about it, just it makes common sense. Pros is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/FakeTheNation will be taken off. That's pros.com/FakeTheNation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/FakeTheNation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/FakeTheNation. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, wow.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
We're back and we're ready for topic number 1B. It's topic number 1B because we're not going to spend too much time talking about this impeachment. But I do want to mention it. It's because it's the second impeachment in for the first ever time on one president. And it just started yesterday. And the question I want to ask you guys, and again, we're taping Wednesday afternoon, and the actual first day of it, the impeachment trial, just started like an hour ago. So we don't know anything that's really going on, but I do want to have both of your thoughts on this one question, which is that it's more than likely that Trump will not be convicted. Is this impeachment still worth it, Mike?
I think it is for, you know, moral reasons to see who says that it's not worth impeaching him. You know, like when you look back at history, there's definitely congressmen and senators who voted in favor of slavery and they're now marked forever with that. Or, you know, in favor right. of the, more people. Obviously, the Iraq war was almost overwhelming, but like right. you get to see those people and go, you made that bad decision. And I think it's important, even if he is acquitted, to see who voted to acquit him, just so that is forever on their permanent record. And I think history will bear that out. It's also worth doing because Trump's lawyers are so bad at it that they have you seen the opening arguments of Trump's lawyer? Like, it was almost like if you fed a bunch of opening statements from Law and Order into an AI and just saw what it wrote out. Like, it was almost inspirational because I was like, oh, I could be a lawyer. I didn't think that. I thought it was hard, but I could do this.
Right. You're like, oh, law school is just watching TV? Like, I had no idea.
He said, like, one thing where he's like, if we use common law, then maybe, like, we'll have kings again. It's like, no, everything's built on common law, you idiot. Like, it's so crazy.
Ellie, what's your thought?
I mean, I've actually been to law school, and that was the opening from the Trump lawyers is one of the most embarrassing opening statements I've ever seen in my life. And I'm including, like, you know, 1L moot court. Like, that was not at that level. That was embarrassing for all of them, for their ancestors. It was embarrassing. Do I think it's worth it? Look, I would have impeached Trump once every 6 months for his entire presidency. He committed, you know, one of the Republican arguments is that, like, well, the Democrats always want to impeach Trump. Yes, because he's always doing crime. You impeach people when they do crime. Always, right? Like, Trump is the most corrupt president in the history of our country. He deserves the moniker of being twice impeached. Again, I would have had him, you know, quintuple impeached president. So I think it's worth it for the reasons Mike said on just the historical, tip. Ultimately, and I've written about this in The Nation, ultimately, I don't want Trump impeached. I want him indicted. Like and impeachment is a little bit of a sideshow, not just because he's out of office. And yes, it's important to make sure that he can't run again. And yes, you're right. You're not going to be convicted anyway. But the real issue is that Trump has committed crimes. I believe that there is at least a colorable argument that he committed sedition at the letter of the law, that which is a very high standard. But I think you could at least try to prove that. I think, you know, I feel like sometimes I'm the only person that remembers the Mueller report, which laid out 10 instances of obstruction of justice. Now, Mueller said that he couldn't charge the president while he was in office, but guess who ain't in office anymore? So why don't we go back and charge him with those 10 instances of obstruction of justice that the Mueller report has already investigated and laid out, to say nothing of the tax fraud, alleged tax fraud, and all the other illegalities that he committed.
The phone call to the Georgia State Secretary.
Which I just heard today. They've opened an investigation into that. So, like, yeah, I want Trump in jail, right? I want him indicted for crime. And impeachment is not even trying to get me there. So yes, it's important for this kind of historical record. It's important morally and for all those reasons. But fundamentally, Trump is not a defeated ex-president. He's a criminal on the loose, and we should capture him. Put him behind bars.
Right. On the loose in golf courses around America. I think so. For all of the reasons both of you have stated, but just on, and also in a cousin note to what Mike was saying, a cousin note is what we call it. I would say that the other thing is just like literally because this is what you do when people do crime, like you go through the process, and I read somewhere that basically the democracy is an iterative process. It's not like this one impeachment will be a deterrent for everything, but like in aggregate, when we try and convict people of crimes in whatever, you know, from presidents down to, you know, my kid, like there are that's setting the bar for like what is crime. You know what I mean? It's defining it. It's deterring people from doing it. And so again, it's like, I want Biden to know just as much as I want every other president to know, you can't do this shit, because at the very least you'll have this motherfucking hassle of an impeachment and you don't want it, right? Like they will do it. They will do the impeachment and you don't want to be one of those guys. And so again, it's just like, let's build. It's that iterative process that is sometimes a little boring, but in aggregate, it is democracy, right? And so I feel like let's do it for that reason alone. Okay, so we are going to move on from that. And if you want to know more about the impeachment, I'm going to be chatting about it on Instagram Live on Friday at noon, and then it's going to be on my feed. If you missed Friday at noon, the live chat, you can see it afterwards on my Instagrams. And I'm going to be talking with a Fake the Nation alum about what we know so far about the impeachment on Friday at noon. Okay, let us move on to topic number two. So the girls who co-founder Reshma Soojani, along with 50 notable women, called on the Biden administration to create a Marshall Plan for moms. They want moms to be considered essential workers and to be issued $2,400 checks per month in direct payments for their unseen and unpaid labor. And, you know, moms have made the most adjustments during the pandemic, nay, the most disruptive overhauls during this pandemic. And a Marshall Plan for Moms argues that the economic recovery should put them at the center. What do you think of this call? And again, Mike, I know you're not a mom, or a person or with a family.
Nope.
But no again, family. As just a citizen, and I don't, you are talking to a mom, but I don't want that to color your anything you say. If you think this is a bad idea, that's fine. If you think it's a good idea, fine. I don't, or somewhere in the middle. What do you think?
That's what moms always say. Be careful.
Oh no! There's no wrong answer. I don't know. I haven't seen the plan in detail, so I don't want to be like, well, how would it work? Because that's always a terrible answer when you yourself could find out. I think it's a good idea. I'm always in favor of more social programs. I think that, you know, giving people money to right now, especially to like care for your family, you know, because. You're right. The majority of the labor does fall on women, even in a two-parent household, and many women either had to limit or cut back or quit entirely on their jobs. I think it's fine. I mean, I'm sure that there should be some sort of way of, like, if you're a single father, maybe to also get a payment if you're in a similar circumstance, but I have nothing against giving people more money from the government that we're spending on weapons anyway.
Yeah, so if I was going to criticize the plan, it would only be to say that it doesn't go far enough. This pandemic has been ruinous to working women. The stats aren't even fully in yet, but what we know so far is that women disproportionately, by a lot, have left the workforce entirely. They've seen a cutback on their wages. They've seen they've been fired disproportionately towards men. Certainly, as this goes through, what we're going to see is that their promotion track and their career tracks are being held back because of all of the massive changes they've had to make to deal with this pandemic. And $2,400, while, yeah, sure, that's a start, it doesn't even begin to cover the amount of not just unseen labor, but missed opportunity that has disproportionately fallen on women. And I speak of that from the position of a husband who's trying their best to, you know, share the load and comes up at best, you know, with like 30%. Like on a good day of the changes that my wife has had to make to handle the homeschooling and the, you know, for a long time, we couldn't even order meals. So the extra cooking, like there's so much extra laundry now because everybody's in the household, like just things that you don't even think about that just get added on. And so like, if you're the guy and you're doing like a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of this, it exponentially, you still aren't even coming close to sharing the load. And I try. Don't even give me right? But $2,400, that's great. The real thing here, and I said this literally at the start of the pandemic, you can go back and check me on The Nation. I think I wrote this in April of last year, that what this is showing is how terribly we have merged our school system and our childcare system. We've made that the same system, and that is insane. No other industrialized country does that, right? And once the school system went away, that's why all of the childcare responsibilities devolved upon the family and therefore disproportionately devolved on women. What we must do going forward, and again, this is an issue where we didn't all experience this pandemic equally, what we must do going forward is to disassociate the childcare system and the school system and then make the childcare system free, just like technically the school system is free. Right. Like that is what needs to happen. We don't just need, you know, so we can start with like, you know, payments for childcare, but we need a free, reliable, consistent childcare system. The reason why we don't have it is because we're still operating in this 1950s anachronism where the assumption is that somebody is home with the kids. Somebody is available to be home with the kids. That has not been true in this country for at least 50 years. But we still operate like it is, and so we still operate without a kind of nationalized childcare system.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's an excellent point. And I want to just give some numbers to what Ellie was talking about. Women have lost 5.4 million jobs during the recession, which is 1 million more than men. 2 million women have left the workforce, which is four times the rate of men. And women are disproportionately employed in the service sector. So that's why they've seen the most of the losses, because their jobs are not available for telecommuting. I just want to say something about, you know, what I mean, the Marshall Plan for Moms, I mean, it rolls off the tongue. Like, as a marketing ploy, I kind of love it. But I do think one thing that's weird about it for me is, like, I think it's, to me, it should be more a Marshall Plan for families. And I say that as someone who, you know, in my family, I'm more the breadwinner, I would say, and the labor, you know, and I'd say we're really a 50-50 labor when it comes to parenting. And sometimes these things are talked about a little bit in the, and look, I'm not trying to say, we've not evolved, I'm not trying to accuse us of having evolved. But sometimes we talk about families in like a 1980s sitcom way, you know what I mean? Where we're like, you know, like, and Mike, you see this with comedians, right? Where they'll be like, oh, you know, the foreplay for me at home is if my husband does the dishes, right? Like that joke. Like,
yeah. I hate my husband, I hate my wife humor.
Yeah, all that stuff. And it's like the 1980s sitcom, you know, a notion of how families operate. And like, I feel like I'm operating in a 2021 family where it's like my husband's a feminist and he doesn't fucking ever talk about being one. It's just like, it is the way that it is, like where he recommend that my baby have my last name. You know what I mean? It's like, that's where, right. Our baby, sorry. that's where, hey, come on. Who's not the feminist here? So sometimes these things I feel like, you know, almost keep us back from evolving a little bit. Like sometimes the way we talk about these things, like, may prohibit us from evolving. But that said, I believe families deserve a shitload of childcare, like, support. A shitload of childcare support. It is ridiculous what we have to do for childcare in this country. And, you know, I say that from experience. It is ridiculous. It is a backbreaking financial commitment to find other people to, you know, care for your child as you then work endless hours in a freelancer's economy with no support, you know, with no actual institutional support rails. It's ridiculous. And we should have that. I mean, we should just have money going to families. Like, that's, I think it's, whether you want to call it, it's the, you know, that it's going to moms or going to families. Yes, money should be going to families. And then there's something that I saw that was really, I thought, again, you don't have to believe in social services. If the thing you believe in is fucking capitalism and the GDP, then there's a study for that, which there's a study that estimates an increase in female participation equal to that of men would raise the U.S. GDP by 5%. And when we're talking about GDP, that's a significant increase. So you don't need to care about people. If you only care about money, this is better for your fucking money, you know? Yes, Ellie.
Can I just push back a little bit? Because while, sure, yes, I definitely think this is a family issue, and I've said a lot of times that, you know, women's issues are families' issues, and that's why dads and men should care about them, and I can do that. I can go down that road. But I don't want to risk glossing over the unique pressures and stresses that are being placed on women, especially in this moment. So while you might have, you know, kind of, you might have achieved the ideal of a real, you know, 50-50 split and a kind of, and that kind of household, that's just not the reality for most working women in this country. And one of the stats, and it's because,
right,
of the,
I know.
There's
I,
so
I
many...
didn't mean, again, I didn't mean to accuse us of having evolved. Like, I did, there was, just because I am in an evolved situation, but yeah.
There's so many hidden factors that hold women back, especially in this crisis. So one of the stats that jumped off the page for me when I first read it sometime back this summer was looking at scholarship and academia. And what they found was that the male scholarship, you know, papers and books and law review notes written by men have actually gone up during the pandemic, while scholarship from women has kind of fallen off the cliff,
that's
right?
Really interesting.
And so if you think about a college professor, these are college professors, you know, generally well off, generally, you know, middle class or upper, you know, generally, you know, in an educated household would suggest, you know, perhaps a little bit more kind of sharing and equal. And yet still, as you know, as the pandemic takes hold and people get locked in to their houses, the men say, like, well, I'm gonna write a book. And the women say, shit, I gotta do all this stuff, right? And so kind of acknowledging that and finding a way to address that particular kind of unfairness, that deep unfairness that probably doesn't come from, you know, I'm not gonna say that it all comes from bad intentions, but some of it certainly comes from bad intentions. And all of it kind of coalesces around putting women in really difficult positions throughout this crisis. And we see it in stat after stat after stat. Something has to be done to redress that kind of deep unfairness.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I'm also like half obsessed with the Kush ball that you have. Like, I saw that and I was immediately like a dog if you were like shaking keys, where I was like, I know there's an argument going on, but I'm gonna follow that ball with my eyes.
Guys, this is the exciting behind the curtain Zoom shit that you don't even know is happening with Fake the Nation.
It's a wild video for those of you listening. Wild video.
Yeah, we hired the same DP that did the Weeknd's halftime show. sorry, were you gonna say something other than the Kush ball?
Oh no. No, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying in the sense that, like, we don't want it to be this thing of, like, women are weaker and therefore they are paid this money when men could adjust so it's more fair for whole families. But I also see Ellie's point of view in which, like, you know, it's not necessarily bad intentions. It's like, well, men are paid more than women on average, so I guess that's who keeps their job. So then she's further pushed out of the workforce, so therefore the gap gets bigger.
Yeah.
Almost like what we were talking about with black and brown people in vaccine distribution, where outside of, you know, the distrust, there's also like, well, there's fewer medical opportunities. Therefore, there are fewer people to distribute the vaccine. So there are, once again, fewer people are getting it. You know, like it's
even when
it's not bad intentions, oftentimes these things, I don't know, block off certain people. So I'm not against it. I do kind of agree with you in the sense that, like, there are certain families that don't necessarily have a woman at the head of it who might also need help. So as long as there's a system to help families, you know, if there's, you know, if two men have a child and they're struggling, we shouldn't deny them the same benefit.
Right.
But I see what you're both saying. Again, I am sort of not affected by it. I'm very lucky. I make a TV writer salary while living alone. So it's hard for me to, like, opine on what other people should be doing to help other people. But I think it's a good, I think overall it's a good idea.
Hey, Mike, it literally never stops me from having opinions about other people's lives. I'm like, oh, you're a metallurgist in Spain? I'll tell you how you should be. All right, folks, tell me, what do you think of the Marshall Plan for moms? Also, just in case it was unclear, I support moms. in case it came out like I'm like a self-hating whatever, I'm not. Okay.
You famously hate moms.
I hate moms.
Fire bad.
Now you know. All right, let us move on to topic number three. People Are Still Fucking is the title of this segment. We might be in a pandemic, but people are still meeting and they're still fucking. And as long as they're safe, I'm so happy to hear about it.
Yeah.
I actually know of a few pandemic relationships and I can expound on those. But first, my question for both of you is, what have you heard about dating during the pandemic? We're going to start with Ellie, the one who seems the furthest away from dating.
We just did a whole segment on family to know. This is single man. You take it away, single man.
Oh, right,
you do
so
it.
When it's not the social issues, here comes Mike. I've heard everything from people who are just like outright getting there, getting fucked Like, and versus people who have, like, met in, like, a real relationship and, like, have developed a real solid relationship. I have not dated much during the pandemic, again, because I'm a, like, a rules person. So I'm like, oh, that's not, you're not supposed to do that. But I've definitely, like, hung out with a couple people. There were people that I knew well kind of already and knew what their lifestyle was like in terms of, like, they didn't have a roommate or they had a roommate. And that roommate, I also knew that roommate and I know they were safe. So right. I've gone out a couple times, but only under, like, very strict circumstances. And usually when it's been like that, it's been, like, you know, a walk. Like, a walk in the park where even if you're not necessarily 6 feet apart, you're still outside, you're wearing masks.
Right, there's wind, da-da-da-da, yeah.
Yeah, but I know, like, I definitely, because again, we both know comedians, and comedians are the least safe people in the world. but like, I know people who,
you
like, went on a ton of dates.
You can just expect that comedians are diseased. In general, you can just expect that comedians are diseased.
I did hear one story of, like, and whether or not it's apocryphal or not, I choose to believe it's true, but this is very friend of a friend, but someone was saying that, like, they caught COVID through cheating. And that's how their spouse kind of found out, because there was no other way for them to really get it. I don't believe that story, but it's fun to think it's true. I don't know. I know a ton of people who are just going out there, man. They're getting it. And it's a time when people are feeling vulnerable, so I weirdly feel like it's easier than normal.
Right.
Because, like, normally, like, again, you go out on a date, someone could be like, all right, we'll go to the bar and get a drink, fine. Whereas now you kind of have to be certain you want to go on that date. And then there's that sunken cost fallacy of, like, well, I totally got myself ready in a spacesuit to see this person. So I'm going to keep talking to them because I feel bad.
Ellie, what have you, is your knowledge of this pandemic dating scene?
All right. So, I'm the wrong guy to ask. I met my wife on the second day
you
of college.
You caught COVID and that's how they found out.
And, like,
I love watching you squirm, though. This is the best.
I have been off the market for quite a long time. So I'm not the right guy to ask. I have heard a couple of things. One thing that I have heard from my still single friends, at least, is that, you know, the whole concept of friends with benefits has been taken to a whole different level in this, right?
That's true.
Because you already, you know, a friend that maybe was on the friend track or whatever, but you already have established a level of trust and whatever. And so now, as opposed to, like, literally trying to go out and find somebody new, it's just like, well, you're here already.
Yeah.
Let's go for it. I trust you. You trust me. You know, this isn't serious, but, you know, it'll serve a function. Yeah. So I've heard that.
Right.
And then almost on the opposite end, you've seen a lot more, you know, proposals, right? You've seen a lot more people who are kind of living in sin, right? Living together, who, you know, through the pandemic kind of reached the shit or get off the pot stage, right? Just like, you know, if you can kind of be housebound with a person for 6 or 8 months, it's probably a good indication that maybe you might as well get back. Like, at that point, what are you waiting for, right? So I do perceive, again, somewhat anecdotally, a spike in weddings and marriage proposals of that nature. So I think they're kind of two sides of the same coin. What people are looking for is trust. What people are looking for is familiarity. Was a kid in the 80s, kind of came, you know, hit hormones in the 90s, you know, very kind of HIV focused and very, you know, like, anybody you sleep with could be your last. And, very like in that, you know, and that went away a bit during the 2000s. You know, I think the 2000s and the teens were much more of a kind of like, hey, I like you, you like me, let's do it. And I feel like this pandemic has really kind of brought back some of the lessons that you learned in the 80s and 90s in terms of, like, you really want to, when in the 80s, it was like, when you sleep with a person, you're actually sleeping with everybody that person has slept with. And now it's like, when you sleep with a person, you're getting COVID from every person that person has got COVID, right? And it's kind of brought us back to that, I perceive. But again, this is not my, you know, I can talk more about the difficulties of trying to maintain a marital relationship when you can't send the kids nowhere, right?
Yeah.
Which is a valid concern here. We are coming up on Valentine's Day. We actually we have like a part-time babysitter in our lives. It's like in our pod or whatever. And like literally, or so you know, never like do anything at night and we're actually going to do something at night where we like got reservations at a restaurant. You know, it's funny because I'm like, oh, COVID changed my nightlife, except for not at all because I have a baby. So it just means that I can't do stand up at night. But it, you know, in terms of like fun, like I wasn't having fun anyway. But the categories of relationships that I've seen are thusly. One is going back to someone you were sort of talking to. I have a friend who like was talking to someone. The COVID sort of stopped everything. And then a few months later, that dude was like, hey, what's up? You know? And she was like, oh, I don't know. Let's, you know, socially distance a coffee. And then that turned into like a full on relationship and they're moving in together and it's great.
Oh.
Right? Because, and it's interesting because I think here's the other thing that's in that category of relationship. What happens is people are so overwhelmed by the choices, right? The Tinder is just going down to the cereal aisle and being like, I don't know. There's too many cereal choices. I'm going to lose my mind. And so you don't pick one. You don't stick with one. And that, I think, was a big feature of dating life before COVID is not sticking to one.
Yeah.
And I think for a large category of people that may have had commitment phobia, COVID was just like, you know what? I'm going to just stick with this because it's easier. And right. I don't have the same options that I did before. At least the options, you know, some of those options have like thorny spikes on them and I don't want to deal. And so I think that that's been like an interesting sort of change in the way that commitment phobes may behave. And then there's another category, which is people who are freshly like going on, you know, Bumble. Bumble tends to be very popular among my friends. Going on Tinder and all these. Sorry?
What's Bumble?
The one, Bumble's the one that girls reach out. The girls. Okay. Where the ladies reach out, right, Mike? Am I mixing it up?
I mean, you're right. Bumble wasn't. I don't know. It was a lot of tumbleweeds for me on Bumble, but
okay,
you know,
okay.
a lot of you know the sound of the wind that's just quiet. It's like that. It was like that for me.
I grew up in the desert, so I'm weirdly fond of the sound of tumbleweeds. So there's the category of people who just like straight up doing traditional online dating, and then the dating has a ton of questions. Like, before we meet up, what's your mask protocol? This is mine. Will you do my mask protocol? Will you blah, blah, blah? And then in that scenario, I've also seen a blossoming relationship from a friend of mine where they decided to do their Are We Exclusive? And the really romantic declaration that was made upon exclusivity was just like, yeah, let's be exclusive. It's just easier right now.
Yes, yes.
Which is just the words that every girl wants to hear on the exclusivity conversation.
That's so funny. Why don't we just be exclusive? It's easier.
It's easier. I don't want to wear a mask anymore on first dates.
But the moment I get that second vaccine, I am gone.
Yay, this is fucking over. And then the other funny thing is I think the pressure of determining the status of their relationship is the other weird thing that happens where it's like, is this like going somewhere? And then people have to just really be honest with themselves of just like, oh, in fact, it is not. You have been a COVID boyfriend. I will see you later. And that's also fair because national tragedies, international tragedies have a way of bringing people together, but they don't necessarily mean that those things are going to stick and work out, you know?
As Sandra Bullock said in Speed.
As Sandra Bullock said in Speed, hurry up, there's a stroller. that was carrying recycling, remember? That's the one scene from that movie that I remember. That the stroller knocks over and you're in the audience and you're like, oh, fuck, a baby died. But it's recycling in a stroller.
Oh, they were just homeless. Grim.
It's fine. Why do they have an empty stroller? You don't want to talk about that.
Yeah. We don't need to get into income inequality right this second in this movie. Am I right, Keanu? But here's one thing that I think is really interesting. And, you know, you sort of brought this up, Ellie, of like, you know, if you're having sex with me, you're getting coronavirus from everybody I've had sex with. It's this phenomenon of like people are now having to talk so much before a makeout sesh because it's like, what is your mask protocol? What are we at? Like, at what date do you take off the mask? Like, all of that's like, are you going to get tested? When do you get tested? How much quarantining before, after the test? Yeah. You know, and it's like, it's funny because it's a level of comfort in talking about sex that I've never had. I'm just sort of like, everything will be an unspoken, you know what I mean? Like, you'll know because my bra came off. That's how you'll know, you know? I've just like never been good at like verbalizing anything in those situations. And at reading about these people who are just like now so like going down bullet points of like how to talk about having sex during coronavirus, made me so uncomfortable. What do you think of that?
I think people should be following the bullet points personally. I think I like sex as next to the next person as much as the next person who's had it before, but I don't know. I feel like it's okay. It's proper. Like, you know, like Ellie was saying about like the late 80s, early 90s. I think that you would be in the same situation where you're like, have you been safe? You know, like, what do you do? Do you do any needle drugs? I know that those are rude questions, but at that time, those were important questions. And I think now it's fair to be like, hey, do you have 7 roommates? Then it might be different for me. You know what I mean?
I think like, I've always been a talker, somewhat not surprisingly. So I've always been, you know, always willing to have a discussion about what's going to happen next. And honestly, at the beginning of the pandemic, it's less so now, but at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, my wife and I were trying to, it's hard, again, people experience this differently. But like at the beginning of the pandemic, it was kind of like, all right, both of us can't die. So, like, the reactions, right? One of us must survive. So if any one of us didn't, like, had to do risky behavior just to, in the earlier time, to keep our jobs, you know, before everybody kind of caught up, well, then it was like, should we interpersonally kind of try to quarantine or try to somewhat keep distance from each other so that there's a chance that one of us would get sick, but the other one wouldn't, and thus survive for the children. I mean, like, these are the conversations that are happening in kind of March of 2020 and April of 2020. You know, we don't have to worry about that. We don't worry about that as much now. But I mean, so I do think that having it's really a question of how responsible you want to be versus how, you know, whereas for many people, sex, they feel, or their turn on is that impulsiveness, is that, you know, heat of the moment, heat of passion kind of thing. Yeah. And COVID is, I think, for a lot of people, ripping that impulsiveness away from people, which I imagine if you're still alive is probably terrible for you. Again. Yeah. I've got a kid who's 8 and 5. Like, impulsiveness went out the window. Sometime around 2016, right? Like, that is...
Right.
No, impulsiveness is literally, like, me and my husband 3 weeks ago being like, should we get the babysitter to do this one Saturday night? Like, that is literally impulsive. Like, we were like, what? That's crazy. Don't be crazy. Like, should we? You know what I mean? It was, like, so impulsive to plan something 1 month and ahead. Right. And I'm
taking a long weekend at the end of February.
What?
in October, someone I knew was like, hey, like, I've been totally safe. Do you want to go, like, apple picking? And to me, it was, like, the most taboo, scandalous thing I've done in months.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm outside apple picking in a city that's not my own. Like, I felt, like, so dangerous.
Totally. Oh, my God. Well, folks, I want to hear about your pandemic love stories. Hit me up. I am endlessly fascinated by these things. And I want to know if you're finding pandemic love, if you've rekindled a pandemic love, if you've terminated a pandemic love, to hit me up. I'm so curious. And now that we have to end the show, I just want to ask you both, what is making you happy? I know that's a really random question. It could be anything from a Pop-Tart you ate this morning to, a law. or something.
I really like the show WandaVision. I know that's an easy answer, but it's a awesome show and it's very sad, which is everything I need. A sci-fi weirdo show that's sad, right up my alley.
Love it. Ellie?
I mean, like I said, my mom got the vaccine and that means I can probably, I mean, I've been looking at camp brochures like they're the goddamn antidote. Like just... Look, they'll take our kids for 5 hours a day. Honey, that's $20,000. We'll find the money. I need them. Because you know, look, I work from home a lot, right? Like my profession.
Yeah.
Like so the difference with me for the pandemic has not been working from home. It's been that nobody will get the fuck out of my house. Like that's
working with a crowd. Right. Yes. Yep.
Like catch all of me. Like, oh, traffic right there. Just socially distant traffic. I don't care. Like, so I'm super excited about the thought of being able to send the kids to camp.
Ugh, I love that. Camp brochures. And what's making me happy God, what's making me happy? I know I asked this question, but it's not like I had an answer myself.
You have a date coming up. You have a Valentine's Day date, right?
Oh, I have a Valentine's Day. Yes, that I have been like drooling over the thought of having like a nice adult dinner out. So that is making me happy. But also, there's a festival called New York Pop-Up Festival that's making me really happy. There's going to be these pop-up events all over the city between now and I think through the summer, culminating in the opening of Little Islands in New York City. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up. It fucking Little Islands looks like the coolest fucking public works project in America. And you know, they're doing it safe. They're not doing very much pre-announcements. You kind of have to catch things as they happen. But they're really bringing arts back into the city in like an energetic and fun way to remind us that's happening. So let me know if there is things like that happening in your community. I want to know about them. I want to post about them and I want other people to enjoy them as well because those things really do make me happy. Now, I would love for the people of Fake the Nation to know how to follow you and all the good work that you do. Mike, where do they do that?
You can follow me on Twitter at Mike Drucker, MikeDrucker, and on Instagram at Mike Drucker is dead because the other one was already taken.
And definitely watch Full Frontal, where you can see his handiwork. And then when we're back at to the regular world of stand-up, if you don't catch a show with Mike Drucker, you're doing something wrong in your life.
Ah, geez, thank you.
Ellie, where do people find you?
You can read most of my work at thenation.com. I write about twice, sometimes three times a week, depending on the week. I'm on Twitter at LENYC. That's ELIENYC.
You must read Ellie's work in The Nation because it is excelente.
Oh, thank you.
Folks, you know where to find me again. I'm doing Instagram Live Friday at 12, so where we talk about the impeachment. And also, we had a conversation a couple weeks ago where we talked about the spectrum of people in the Trump world and what they will be doing in their futures. And I actually immortalized the spectrum in a video that is on TikTok and on Instagram, where I basically I created a very scientific spectrum of the Trump orbit and put everyone in there. There's one of the categories is dark powers, and that's Kellyanne Conway. I think we can all agree on that. So check out that if you want to see where all the Trump world lives on that spectrum, because we won't have to be talking about him specifically very much longer, I hope and I think. But what I would really like to do is thank the people of Fake the Nation. Thank the people who make Fake the Nation possible. That's our wonderful producer, Anita Flores, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens, Gobby Alter wrote our theme music, Lily Fleshler helps with research, and listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas you might have. You can leave us a voicemail at 331-901-0005. Or you can drop us a line at comments at fakethenation.com. And if you like what you hear, please favorite Fake the Nation on Stitcher, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Pandora, and the SiriusXM app. And do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because it helps people find out about the show. I'll be back in your earballs next week.